Molly Jackson, and I am really excited to finally do this call with her. We've been chatting over the last few months, and I had a genealogist help with researching her family, and now got it all to put together. So I'm really excited to share.
I've been going through a hard time lately, and you noticed I haven't been on social media like usual. And anyway, the timing of this, I can already feel, is just really great. So
I'm good. I'm excited. Well, Molly, before we get started, can you just introduce yourself, let the listeners know kind of who you are, what your work is, and all of that?
I'm Molly Bice Jackson. I live in Park City, Utah. My background's in performing. I have a degree in music, dance, theater. So I've been a singer, dancer, actress for a long time. In 2008, my daughter passed away unexpectedly, and she choked on an apple in our church parking lot. And I, through a series of events and writing and expressing and blogs and life happenings, I have now I use my performing skills as a public speaker, a keynote speaker. So that's what I do. After Lucy passed away, we had two more children, Peter and Zoe. So they never got to meet Lucy. I am a big city girl at heart, but I live in this little mountain town, but I still do all the things here. I ski and snowboard, mountain bike. I kind of am a forever Peter Pan. I just really refuse to grow up. Yeah.
Well, so I guess
that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. And I've been following you on Instagram for, I don't know, maybe a year or so. Since Brooke White had you on her little Instagram live one time.
And you reached out to me quite a while ago, and it got lost in the shuffle.
Yes.
And this was before I really knew.
Right.
Yeah. The name, my Jewish grandfather. And then it popped up and I'm like, wait a minute. Anyway, it's just salt. So
very cool. Okay. So tell us a bit about that discovery of your Jewish grandfather.
My gosh. So my mom, Nancy Simmons Bice, she grew up in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio. From what I know and have seen, you know, not a lot of money. My grandma, Gail, worked in a rubber tire factory. So much so to the point she had emphysema later in life. I am dog sitting for my parents' dog.
That's all right.
Whom they named Manny after Emmanuel, my Jewish grandfather.
Oh, cool.
And she is just going to town. Anyway, so my grandma Gail had a couple of husbands. You know, as I growing up, it was not very clear. Like, I knew my mom had an alcoholic stepfather, and you know, it was all just, and she had all these half siblings, but it was all very unclear. Turns out later in life, 6 or 7 years ago, my mom calls me and says, I just got my DNA results back. I'm 50% Jewish. And I thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. I don't know why, because my mom, she's just so Jewish. And her friends growing up in Ohio were Jewish, and she's lived in New York City, and she has Yiddish phrases, and she just has a lot of stereotypical Jewish traits. And I even wrote a paper in college, like, the guilt of my Jewish mother that she, I don't know, just, she, I don't remember what it was called exactly. But so I thought, why is this such a big deal? And that's when she said, well, my father, who I thought was my father, was not Jewish. Mm-hmm. I called my sisters and they kind of casually were like, well, yeah, we always knew that the attorney, the Jewish attorney that did mother's divorce, is who got her pregnant. Oh. And my mom was like, what? I'm in my 70s and you're casually just being like, yeah, we all knew you had a different dad.
Oh, wow.
Well, not only the DNA test. When she was in fourth grade, she came home from school for lunch. I guess back in those days, you walked home from school for lunch. And she heard her parents fighting. Mm-hmm. And she heard her dad, Hobert Simmons, say, well, she's not even mine anyway.
Oh, wow.
And she carried that in her heart since fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And Hobert's parents never said, I love you, to my mom. Mm-hmm. It was like this undercurrent that they all kind of knew, but no one really talked about it. So when my mom was in her 50s, she finally confronted Grandma Gail. And all my grandma said was, well, there was a time that we weren't sure if Hobart was your father, but he is your dad. So it was a little, so that's why, you know, she's calling 50% Jewish. Like it was this big deal. My mom's the only one in her family who went to college. She's the only one who joined and stayed in the LDS church. She's the only one who got out of, well, she has one sister, I guess, who's maybe gotten out of the cycle of some poverty type living. But she said, I always knew I was different. And in one side of me feels like, oh my gosh, I knew it. I knew I was special. I knew I was quote unquote better or different. Not in a conceited way, but the other side of me is so sad. Like, who are my siblings? Who is my dad? Where do I belong? So she hired people. She tried to stitch it together. It's a long story, but we finally figured out who he was. Now you're here to tell me more about him.
A bit more about him. Very cool. Well, that's, yeah. I mean, it's kind of fascinating how your mom just felt, you know, that she didn't fit and that there was more to her than what her family was, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to share my screen here. So this is the World War II draft registration for your biological grandfather, Emmanuel Hirshhorn. So he did change his name, as you know, to Horn at some point. We don't know exactly when that happened, but so this is his draft registration. I don't even know if you can see it very well, but I thought it was really cool that it tells like what he looked like. Like he was 5'10 and a half. He weighed 153 pounds. He was white, blue eyes, blonde hair, and ruddy complexion. So it's not like the typical Jewish look, you know?
Well, I've even seen and been told his hair was kind of blonde. I mean, not blonde. Oh. Red.
Kind of red. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, would you stop it? Wait, I'm going to take his collar off. There we go.
There you go. Not quite.
Maybe he was, we're talking about his namesake here.
There you go. Emmanuel. Yeah. So this is in 1941 that this draft registration was. And he's also, as his occupation, it says a claim adjuster and an airplane pilot. So
I knew about the airplane. I didn't know about the claim adjuster.
Yeah. So that was before he became an attorney. But
so that's the theory he's a pilot. Is that he, in Dayton, Ohio, the theory is that they were, well, no, I know what it is. So for the listeners, once we found out who he was, my mom found his daughters, Carol and Stephanie, and drafted a letter to them. And she was so scared to send it. She sat on it for over a year. And this past July, less than six months ago, I was standing in my kitchen and I was just doing the dishes and it was just pure inspiration. And it said, like, do it now. Do it right now. And I called my sister, she's a very busy attorney. She actually answered my call. And I was like, this is our grandfather. I know mom is scared to death. She's so scared of rejection. She had such a hard childhood. But we want to know too. We want to know about our family. And mom is turning 80 in July. Uh-huh. She was turning 80 in like 2.5 weeks. This was the 4th of July. Her birthday's July 22nd. So my sister she Googled our cousins. And 3 out of the 4 of them are attorneys. And so she sent a letter from her law firm to my cousin's law firm that's like an official, like, it's clearly not spam. It's not some stranger. It's like a spring, like, whatever. And she just was like, I would like to talk to you about a relative of ours. And so my cousin Allie in New York City gets this and she's like, now what does this mean? Who is this person? Did my dad have a child? You know, whatever. One thing led to another. within 2 weeks, my mom's sister, Carol, comes to Salt Lake for my mom's 80th surprise birthday.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
And I mean, and I'll have to show you the videos. And she brought a box of World War II stuff from my grandpa. And so their theory is that, so he was a pilot and he would actually fly to different places to deliver supplies. And this was pre having a flight station in Dayton. What's the word? I don't know.
Like an airport or like a
airport, the
oh, like a base, like yes.
The word okay. Base pre Air Force base there. So he was bringing supplies in and my grandma would go to the officers club to dance and meet people. So this was after she'd had her first child, was divorced, went to the officers club and met Emmanuel. Whether it was a one-night stand or a two-week fling, we don't know. He went off to war. My grandma realizes she's pregnant, and it's 1942, so she gets back together with her first husband.
Oh, wow.
So that's the theory. That's the theory.
Right, right.
So, I'm here to learn from you, and I'm like,
no, no, that's good. That's good. Okay. So then, so your mother was born in, was it 1942 or 1943?
I think
93. Okay. So this Emmanuel, he did go on to marry Mary Kunstler in, I think this was, this was 1943. So shortly after his relationship with your grandmother, that would have, would have been. So
yeah,
this was, they got married in his grandparents' home. Well, his parents' home. So Emmanuel's parents' home, Solomon and Rose was actually a stepmother. That's where they lived in Baltimore.
Wow.
It's not like a glamorous home to have a wedding, but that's where they got married.
Yeah. Wow.
And then later, so then Emmanuel and his wife, Mary, they lived in 1950. This was their home. He was a lawyer at the time in Baltimore, and this home still exists. He was 30 years old, living with his wife, Mary, and their two daughters, who were 5 and 1 at the time, who I believe your mother has met.
Yes, and I met one of them, yes, and talked to the other.
So this is the side of their home, too. So it looks like it's been updated, but that looks like it was still the same home that they would have lived in 1950. Well, their addresses are on the census, so then you can look up the addresses and see if they're still standing or not. So, yeah, so that was where they lived. In 1950.
So are we going to talk about his parents at all?
Yes. That's what we're getting to right here.
No stepmom. He had a stepmom because his mom passed away.
Right.
And he didn't talk about it much. It was very painful.
Yeah. Oh,
but
really?
I don't
know. Okay. 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 Yeah. So this is actually the passenger list showing your second great grandmother. So their names are written in either Hebrew or Yiddish, I think. So we've got Sissel, which she went by Sarah or Jenny after. So this is actually Solomon's mother. So Emmanuel's father's mother.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. So here's Sissel, and I'm not sure. Her name was Rachel after she came to the United States. And then Shlamin or Solomon is him. So he's 6 years old when their family came from, which was Russia, now Ukraine, to the United States. Okay.
And my parents went on 4 missions. 4 or 3? They were supposed to go to England, and at the last minute, they got called to Russia and Ukraine.
Oh, wow. Oh,
they spent 7 years.
That is crazy.
Over there. Even during the war, when the war started, just recently, they were there. So,
So they probably know where some of these places are.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So Solomon, so he's Emmanuel's father. Their family came, this was in 1898 to the United States. They settled in Baltimore. And so they came, the wife and 4 children came. And then it says by whom the passage was paid was by the husband or father. So this was Solomon's father, Joseph. They had $20 when they came and they were going to join her husband or father. So Solomon's father, Joseph, had already come to Baltimore, and then the rest of the family came.
Do we know Joseph's last name? Was it still?
So Hirshhorn. Yeah, Hirshhorn. So I don't know if you can read it very well there, but that's Hirshhorn.
Or if that was a discussion. But I'm trying to keep track of if we're on the mom's side or
of who's whose. Yes. Yeah. So this is, so Emmanuel's.
Joseph
Hirshhorn. Grandfather. Yeah. So Joseph Hirshhorn was already in Baltimore, and then his wife and their four children came.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So, yeah. So Joseph and Jenny is what she went by later, are your second great grandparents. Then Solomon is their son, who is your great grandfather. And then Emmanuel was Solomon's son. Okay. Wow. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So this town here, this is what their last residence was, and it's Oranin in Russia. Ooh. So I looked that up, and it is in the Ukraine now. And here is a map of where that is. So here's Oranin. It's spelled a little differently than they wrote on that passenger list. So this is in the Ukraine here, which was part of Russia at that time.
It's kind of close to Kyiv. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Wow.
That was their last residence. It's likely that that's where their family lived for generations, because they didn't really move around much unless they were going to immigrate somewhere, right?
Okay. So then, so their passage was obviously on boat out of where?
From Bremen, Germany, which is probably up here somewhere. So they would have probably went by train across to Bremen and then went to the United States from there.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Okay.
So then I looked into a little bit of Oranin. You know, what is that little town? What was that like? So it was a small town. I think said there's like 4,000. Now I like put this together last minute. I was like, oh, I should share that. So anyways, so I kind of threw this together just in the last hour because I thought it would be interesting to have more of that context. So this is some of the rebuilt Jewish houses in the center of Oranin. And at that time, a Jew could not own a farm or cultivate his own field or gather the fruit of his own orchard. Ownership of land was forbidden to Jews. So in a country where agriculture was the main occupation of the people, the Jew was excluded from participation in it, except for buying and selling the fruits of other people's labors. So that's likely why they left. The Jews were persecuted there in Russia at the time. The population in that town, it was about half Jewish.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you say these are rebuilt Jewish housing, is that because they were destroyed during?
Possibly. I'm not sure. I didn't have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't look into it a ton. But that's what it said on the website that I found about it.
Yeah. Whoa. She's amazing.
So then there were five houses of worship in Oranin of Jewish worship. So three of them stood side by side so that the singing and the chanting in one could be heard by the others. But the largest and most impressive house of worship was the Old Shul. And that's what's pictured here. It was so called because no one among the living knew when and by whom the shul was built. So it's kind of a weird looking building. While the other four houses of worship were nothing more than simple two-room houses, one room for men and the other for women, the old shul was architecturally distinct. The shul was a conglomerate of several buildings added to the main structure. Its windows were small and were tucked away at the top of the high walls near the roof. It had no heat, and in the fall and winter, worshippers did not take off their overcoats. It was therefore also known as the cold shul.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it was built.
This was in that town you showed me?
Yeah, yeah.
Their last known. So we don't know where they were before that.
Hmm. Right, so I'm guessing the Hirshhorn family, like they had probably lived there for generations. I'm guessing. Like we haven't done the research there, but that's where their last residence was.
Wow.
I believe there's another record. have to remember what it was, but I think Solomon listed his birthplace as Ornan. So
this is not where Solomon's mother died.
No, Emmanuel's mother.
Emmanuel's mother.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is Emmanuel's father's family, where they came from to the United States, because Emmanuel was born in Maryland. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, so this is where the Hirshhorn family was from.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cool, Megan.
Yeah. Okay, so then, so this is after their family had came to the United States, Joseph and Jenny and their children, Solomon, which is Emmanuel's father. Okay. So in 1900, they were living here at this home on the left with two other families were living there. So this was 2 years after they had come to the United States. Joseph was a tailor and they had five children and they were living in this row house here.
And what year was this roughly?
So this is in 1900.
Okay. Wow.
So they had just come 2 years earlier. He was a tailor and they had five children and two other families were listed as living in that house too. So here they are in that census. He was a tailor, as you can see the occupation there. And I thought it was interesting to see. So this is if they can read or write or speak English. Okay. So you can see that Joseph, the father, he could read and write, but he could not speak English. And Jenny, what she went by, she can read or write or speak English. But the two older children, so Rebecca, she was 9 years old. And then Solomon, your great-grandfather, he could read and write and speak English. And then this younger one, I think he was five. So he couldn't read or write, but he could speak English. So I'm guessing those children, they probably helped their parents communicate with different people in the area. But they must have learned quicker than their parents to speak.
Wow.
So then by 1910, this is the same family, Joseph and Sarah. So she sometimes went by Sarah or Jenny. But they had two more children now, and they were living in Baltimore, but in a different home. And let's just look over. I think I have their, yeah. So now we look at if they could read or write. Joseph could read or write. His wife now could read and write. Wow. And all their children could read or write.
I know.
And they actually own their own home. So that was an O there.
What?
So he was still a tailor, and their three oldest children also helped as a tailor in the cloth house is what is written there.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
It's amazing to see, like, their American dream coming true. What is that name? Molly Freeburg. Yes, I've heard about her. And what is the Rus? Is that short for Russia?
Yeah.
On the right? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Solomon, your great-grandfather, who's from Joseph and Sarah or Jenny, okay, he married Sophia Freeburg. And so this is some of Sophia's family. Okay. So Sophia Freeburg, she married Solomon in about 1913. So here she is with her widowed mother and her older brother and sister. And they were living in Baltimore also at the time. Okay. She was a seamstress. Okay. So here is the passenger list of, I believe that says Model Freeburg, maybe. So by Molly. So this is probably Yiddish. She was Yiddish. And her daughter, Schwer or Sophia, is what she called herself when she got to the United States. Okay. So model, or what she was known by, is Molly later, was 55 and a widow, and her daughter, 18, single, came with her. So she was a seamstress. And I was trying to make out. So this is the town she was from. And I was like trying to look that up on Google or anything, and I could not find anything. So there might be a Ukrainian or Russian genealogist that would be able to help us with that some more. But that was the town that they were from. And then this is their last, their closest relative in that town. So I don't know exactly how to read all of that, but they
These are fellow Ukrainian immigrants that landed in the same city as my great-great.
Yes.
And then married.
Yes.
Well, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure where it's from. It might have been Russia. Might have been Russia turned into Ukraine. I don't know for sure where that town is.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay. So this is where, Sophia was living with her widowed mother and two of her siblings. And this is where Solomon was living. So Emmanuel's father was living here. So they live just less than a mile away. This was in 1910. So they both lived pretty close to each other. 1910, they got married around 1913. So that's, they must have met somewhere. They are probably both, you know, maybe they went to the same church.
Right.
But we don't know.
Okay.
For sure there. And then, so they married, they had two sons, the second being Emmanuel in 1920, your grandfather. And then Sophia passed away in 1927. And Solomon remarried in about 1928.
And do we know how she died? It was an illness of some kind, right?
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
The records in Maryland are not easy to come by.
Oh,
there was like an index of her death, but there wasn't like the actual death record. So we need to look into that more of like maybe actually ordering the death record and see what was known about that.
But, okay.
But yeah, but that is all that I have to share with you. Once I started like looking into Sophia's family, I'm like, oh, there's some cool stuff here that might show some more.
That's my great grandma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so Sophia's your great grandmother. So Molly is your second great grandmother.
Wow.
It was her.
Oh my gosh. I know this happens to you every time, but it's like, I even told my husband when we found out who my grandfather was and I got to meet my Jewish aunts and cousins. And like I said, I'm a performer. I lived in New York for a while. I have friends on Broadway. And then I found out Emmanuel loved Broadway. He has all these playbills, which are the programs. And just the sense of like, oh, I feel like who I am makes more sense now. And it's just been so wonderful. And not that I feel ownership or claiming of like this deep Jewish identity, but I've always been drawn to that culture and tradition. And now with everything happening in Israel and just, I don't know, it's just a very, and even the war in Ukraine recently, when my parents lived, my Instagram followers were amazing. We raised like $13,000 for two different families from Ukraine. One was the doorman from their hotel. And then another family. And I don't know, just the tumultuousness in the world. And yet how I'm like, I'm connected to both of these very vulnerable places in very real ways. Just that we're all so connected. It's just, yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this is just the start of it. Like, there's a lot more that you can learn about these ancestors of yours, especially if we can figure out, you know, where that Sophia and Molly came from, find where that town was, find more about their family, you know. So
we couldn't tell the town. We couldn't even tell what language it. Do we think it was Russian?
Right.
Because it looked
probably.
Okay.
I think it did say Russia somewhere. Yeah.
Oh,
like on the censuses, it said that they are from Russia. Yeah.
That's right.
So someone that can speak there and is familiar with the places there.
Plenty of people.
Yeah. So they might be able to decipher that and figure that out. It was really cool to be able to dive into more of your family. And as I did, it was, I feel like just at the end there, when I was finding these last minute things to share with you, felt like they want to be known by you.
That's really cool. I know my grandpa struggled a lot when his mom died. And from what I know of him, he was just the nicest. You know, my new Jewish aunts, they just tell my mom, they're like, if Emmanuel would have known you existed, he would have just bent over backwards. He used to leave out cold drinks for the delivery people, and the UPS guy. And then, you know, he was a pilot. Then he became an attorney for a long, long time. And later in life, I think in his 70s, he said, like, I miss flying. So he went back. I don't know if it was volunteer or not. I think it was. And he became a pilot for organ donation.
Oh, wow.
And he, you know, and our daughter was an organ donor. I don't know. Just I'm clearly in a really emotional place right now, just in my personal life. But this was really neat, Megan. I really appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot of fun to share this with you, Molly. And I'm grateful for this opportunity. And I hope that you can connect further with those ancestors and learn even more. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Where can my followers find you? Or, I mean, you're for hire, right? People hire you to do this.
Yeah. So I do similar things as we're doing here today, where I kind of find those stories of your ancestors and present it kind of like this, a little more in depth. I don't know, like there's the typical genealogists that, you know, do research reports and things, but I feel like this is, I don't know, more powerful to put it all together and kind of figure out those little, you know, those little pieces of the puzzles that kind of tell what's going on. So it's a lot of fun. But I want to know, where can my people find you? Because I feel like I feel like your Instagram is different than anyone else's. Like, what you share is much more real. And I think that realness, that humanness, just like how we learn about our ancestors, that realness of us can help us connect. So Molly's audio cut out at the last little bit here. So you can go follow Molly at Smalley Spice on Instagram. And she is a lot of fun to follow. So go follow her. I'll put her link in the show notes here. Also, we had Katie Garner from krgarnergenealogy.com help with this episode. She put some things together for this episode about Molly's ancestors, found some information that I didn't even have time to share. So I'll be sending that to Molly. But if you need help with your family history, go check out Katie at krgarnergenealogy.com. And she has a newsletter that goes on every week. You can get on her email list when you go to her website. So thank you so much, Katie. So here is a tip from Katie about how you can apply some of what she did for this episode for Molly in your own research.
My genealogy tip is to learn background information about your ancestors. So just like us today, our ancestors were affected by their history and culture. The more you understand about the time and place they lived, the more you understand them. In the case of this project, I had previously learned about Jewish immigration from Russia, so I knew that had to apply to the ancestors when I realized they were Jewish and that they emigrated from Russia in the 1890s. There are many resources to learn about historical background of our ancestors, history books and documentaries, Google searches, history specifically about the place that they came from. And even well-researched historical fiction can be insightful. So enjoy learning about your ancestors, including their background.
Thank you, Katie, for that tip. Also, I wanted to let you know about a course that I'm going to be running in January. It's an online course where we're going to take a look at one of your close ancestors, like a great-grandparent or a great-great-grandparent. It's okay if they've already been research, that will actually save you a lot of time. If they haven't been researched, that's fine. I'm going to show you how to do that as well. But we're going to really learn how to connect to this ancestor on a deeper level than just knowing who they were. Okay, we're going to look at all aspects of their lives, physical, social, emotional, intellectual, financial. I feel like there's more than that. Anyways, we're going to be learning about who this ancestor was, how you can connect to them, thinking about what patterns might have happened in their lives that maybe are going on today in your own, You're going to write a letter to this ancestor. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if this sounds interesting to you, if you want to learn how to really connect deeper to your ancestors, we'll go through the process with one ancestor, but then you can use the same process with any of your other ancestors. So this course is going to be starting in January. If you want more info about that, if you're interested in getting one of the 5, maybe 10 spots, I'm going to cap it at 10 for sure. So if you want one of those spots, my email list will be getting the email on Thursday before I talk about it anywhere else. So if you want one of those spots, be sure that you are on my email list. The easiest way is just to take that quiz. If you go to knowyourancestors.co/quiz, you can take a quiz that asks you how connected you are to your ancestor, and that will make sure that you are on my email list. Okay? So thanks so much for listening today. If you like this podcast, please go leave a review on iTunes. That really helps to get our podcast higher up in the ranks so more people see it. So thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.